Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Put-em-up Riley.
Hey, hey, hey. I put him up.
I wasn't sure if that was just a general boxing voice you were doing or a Rocky voice.
I don't know. I'm very distracted by your shirt right now.
Thank you.
It's kind of lulling me to sleep.
And we also got Spencer Adonis Williams.
Okay, just because I'm the only black one here doesn't mean we get to
just... No! Don't... Why did you bring race into this?
You always do!
Adonis is the name of a god. Come on.
Uh-huh.
Ask Chad.
Adonis is not the name of a god.
That's close.
It is a figure from Greek mythology, but it's a guy who became so obsessed with his own reflection that they turned him into like a flower by the lake, I think.
I thought that was like Narcissus.
Oh, that is Narcissus. Maybe Adonis is. Maybe you're right.
I don't know. We'll get everything all together once we get into the episode. We're going to be talking about the recently released Creed 2. So stick around as we jump into that. But before we do, Chad, give him a little bit of that opening credits.
Sure will. When the world makes you feel like your back's against the ropes, you can always give your mind an escape by listening to an episode of The Filmlosophers brought to you every week by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. You don't have to train like a gym beast, but you will have to lift exactly one finger to subscribe to The Filmlosophers. Once you're a subscriber, you'll get a new lesson each Wednesday morning on your streaming platform of choice, including Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, or Audio Boom, or all of the above.
True.
We don't encourage fistfights, but if you feel the need to get into a good-natured verbal sparring match, we're willing to give it a try. Follow The Filmlosophers on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101.
I bite my thumb at you, sir. Sorry.
Finally, you can take a look at our win-loss record anytime at filmlosophers.com, where you'll find our episode archives of over 140 episodes as of this recording.
That's right. We have hit the 140 mark. I was just talking with somebody today, and they were asking, how long have you been podcasting?
8 years.
It seems like it, in a good way, because like we've been... No, I mean that in a good way, because we've been doing this already for...
It's not true. We haven't even been doing it 3 years.
No. Well, if you think about it...
Almost.
So we've done it weekly, and we have given... we have done an episode a week, minus the last 2 weeks in this previous month.
Yeah, we missed like... Three total weeks in almost 3 years.
But if you think about it, 52 weeks in a year, 52 times 2, it's 104, plus the somewhat extra, the 36. So the 36 more episodes, that's about a year and 2 years and a half, 2.5 years. So
yeah, it's over 2.5 years. I mean, we'll celebrate a birthday here in early 2019.
That we will. But before we
get out of our terrible twos.
God willing. We'll see. But before we start celebrating birthdays, let's talk a little bit about Creed 2. The film was released a few weeks ago during the Thanksgiving break, and a lot of people flocked to the theaters. It was between Creed 2 and Ralph Breaks the Internet. And a lot of people went to go see both of those films during that weekend, so... It's really interesting to now kind of follow up after the chaos, after the madness of everybody going to the theaters and whatnot, because we were the only people who decided to go see Robin Hood that weekend.
You know what, though? Here's the thing. People in general knew that they wanted to see Ralph Breaks the Internet. A lot of them knew that they wanted to see Creed 2, and a lot of them had questions about whether or not to see Robin Hood. And now we've answered those questions, so if you didn't see Robin Hood, now you know you don't have to. Now you can listen to the reasons why in lesson 139 if you'd like to on the Filmlosophers website at filmlosophers.com.
So before we jump into this episode, Chad, why don't you give us a little bit of that synopsis goodness?
It depends. Is this going to work or not?
It should.
We have like a bad history with synopses, but we'll give it a try. Life has become a balancing act for Adonis Creed. Between personal obligations and training for his next big fight, he's up against the challenge of his life. Facing an opponent with ties to his family's past only intensifies his impending battle in the ring. Rocky Balboa is there by his side through it all, and together Rocky and Adonis will confront their shared legacy, question what's worth fighting for, and discover that nothing's more important than family. Once again, I was very hopeful. The first 75% of that synopsis, I was like, well, but then they miffed it on a big part of the story.
Why did they even put that there?
I don't know.
That would just be a spoiler anyway.
Anyway, we'll get to it.
Either way.
Don't trust the hype, people. We will set you straight.
Directed by Stephen Caple Jr. and written by Jewel Taylor and Sylvester Stallone, the film stars Michael B. Jordan, Sylvester Stallone, Tessa Thompson, Dolph Lundgren, Florian Montino, Wood Harris, and Felicia Rashad. Creed 2 actually marks the fifth collaboration on screen between Sylvester Stallone and Dolph Lundgren, if you count the first appearance when they both are in Rocky 4. And then you have every Expendable film, and then
and
you
this.
Have this. So Spencer's looking at me confused.
Wait, there's three Expendables films?
There certainly are, sir.
I only thought there was two.
What? What kind of Rocky
have
you been
living
under?
Here's the thing. Here's what happened. Spencer saw the one with Chuck Norris and realized that they've hit their peak and they should not continue. I agree with you.
As in the first film, Victor Drago is played by real-life heavyweight boxer Florian Montanu. The now-retired Andre Ward returns in a brief appearance as Danny Stuntman Wheeler, and Jacob Stitch Duran makes a third appearance as himself in Creed's corner. So if you're unfamiliar with, in the first film, they tried to use a lot of real-life fighters. Actually, they did the same thing in the Rocky Balboa film previous to Creed. Mm-hmm. The main fighter was actually a real boxer, actually a welterweight champion. He was up there, but they used a real boxer for the film to add realism. So this is another opportunity where they brought that aspect back into the films, and it actually really works. In order to get into the same weight class, Michael B. Jordan had to gain 25 pounds of muscle for his role, while Florian Montanu had to lose 20 pounds, although Montanu still ended up having 25 pounds on Jordan at the end of it.
Well,
he's huge in that movie.
He's supposed to be a beast. Also, he's like a foot taller.
He is. Like, head and shoulders above him.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's just no... I mean, there's a comparison. It's not like Michael B. Jordan wasn't getting in shape for this role, but I mean, really,
it's all CGI.
The dude is a monster.
But we obviously, this film has been out for a while. We're looking at least a week and a half. If you haven't had a chance to go see it, it's definitely a film to go and check it out. But we will be having spoilers in this episode, so heads up, this is your warning. We are talking about spoilers. So
you've had 2 weeks. If you care about spoilers, then, you know, I don't know. Pause us. Go watch it. Come back.
Exactly. We can stay in your app. Spence, you look like you were going to say something.
I was not.
You sure?
You misread that.
Okay. Just making sure. Okay. So we got a chance to check out the film. And so just a little bit of disclosure on this film or the franchise itself. I'm a huge fan of the Rocky franchise. I actually have somewhere... in the house. I have the actual full box set of 1 through 5 on DVD, and
I never knew that.
What?
Okay, we're going to fix the lack of communication.
So I have the first 5. I believe I also was given the 6th one, which was Rocky Balboa, and I never had the opportunity to buy Creed and Creed 2, although I have to be honest, the first time I saw Creed was this past, when did we?
Yeah, we watched, we did a Ryan Coogler.
That was about a year ago.
No, it was for Black Panther.
Lesson 99. It was right before Black Panther. Yeah, it was our lesson before. So Lesson 99 is sort of a roundtable review, if you will, of several films.
Of
in preparation for Black Panther. And then Coogler was still an executive producer on this one,
yes,
although he did not direct.
Yeah, around this time, that's when the filming was underway for Black Panther. So that took precedence in terms of his priorities, which makes sense. I mean, Marvel.
And Michael B. Jordan just Xerox copied himself and did both. Because why not?
I mean, it helped. I mean, he was in really great shape in
both of them,
Black Panther and this one. So, but as I said, we got a chance to finally see it. And I'm a huge fan of the franchise. So one of the things I kind of carry into a lot of these types of films, especially films that have such a deep history with the franchise. Like you look at any type of film franchise, there's always purists like Star Wars, even this to the more modern day, like with the Marvel franchises, people who have been following along for the last, how long has it been? 10 years?
10 years.
10 years. All the movies since, you know, Robert Downey Jr. and Iron Man 1, there are people who have been following it. And so like they closely scrutinize any film that comes out in the current day because they want to make sure it's of the same caliber and it's of the same nature and it carries the same heart as the rest of the franchise. Excuse me.
But also moves the story forward and doesn't feel like it's, you know, a rehash of something that you've seen before.
Exactly. And so that's part of like what I carry into, and I'm pretty sure the rest of us do, we carry into when watching a film like Creed 2, because what Ryan Coogler did was he revived the Rocky franchise, handing it off into another person's hand, but still it's very much so a Rocky film. Like it's very much so still in that Rocky franchise. He's still a main staple in the film. Although he's not the focus, he is a big part of the progression of the story. And so you have this Creed 2, which is the follow-up to the first Creed, directed by Ryan Coogler, as we mentioned, to carry on the story and the legacy of what happens with Adonis Creed as he continues his bout as being the heavyweight champion of the world. So, jumping right into it, talking about expectations, I want to go ahead and start with Spence. Not for any other reason other than I like hearing when you have very interesting perspectives and expectations because you wear your red shirt and I just really wait for you to like Hulk out and lose it. So by all means.
Oh, okay. I don't know what that has to do with anything.
Everything.
So expectations for this movie. Well, let's back up and talk about the first Creed.
Oh.
Because, you know, when people want to do like, I guess you'd call it a spinoff, but kind of not really. Like, those have a tendency of not doing so well, and then you're left with, like, characters you love in a story that sucks, or you're not quite following the people you want to. And so, remember initially I was like, I don't have high hopes for the first one, and I was really blown away by the first Creed. And so, when I heard, oh, there's going to be a Creed 2, I was like, okay, I'm in for this. And then I was like, he's going to be fighting Ivan Drago's son. I was like, oh, no, I am so into this movie already. Because that's just insane. Because Rocky IV is one of my favorite Rockies because it's so ridiculous. Because you just got this big man who's basically a stand-in for a dragon. And like
a Russian dragon.
Yeah. A Russian dragon, there you go.
Very important to the story. That also, story and this story, as it turns out.
Also, I forgot about the whole Russian thing. So when Dolph Lundgren starts talking in a Russian accent, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot he was a Russian.
Oh, right. So that he's was from fun. Another country.
That's yeah,
right.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, going into this movie, I was pretty optimistic because they did such a good job with the last one that I felt like they probably could do like balance. Plus with that good, interesting setup of like, hey, your dad killed my dad and now we're going to fight each other.
Your dad killed my... There you go. That's something to say as a play date. Like, hey, your dad killed my dad. That's very nice.
Yeah, so I was pretty excited coming into this.
And it's interesting, just a quick side note, you were talking about the Russian thing. It's funny because if you look... Nobody in that film.
Russians aren't funny.
That's very true. Russians are not funny.
Very stoic. Very serious.
But it's funny because they don't have actual Russians playing these roles. Like, I don't know if you know this, but Dolph Lundgren is actually Swedish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Florian Montenu is German-Romanian. And then Bridget Nielsen, who reprises her role, is actually Danish.
Well, I wouldn't mess with any of them.
No,
so
they all look terrible.
If they want to be Russian, they can be Russian. I'm not going to stand in their way.
By the way, Bridget Nielsen, did she grow since the last time?
She does seem taller.
She was really tall. She looked like Dolph Lundgren in a dress.
I couldn't tell at first that she was a she. And that's not a knock against her. I really wasn't sure what we were seeing at first. Because she's huge.
She is.
She's so jacked.
Although that really does sell like, oh, like this is our child. Like, I believe it.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yeah. He got his height from his mother.
Oh, Lord above.
And most of his muscle mass.
Seriously. Like, her entire build is all him.
That's what Creed Ooh. 3 should be about. She fights for her son's honor.
What? All right, let's bring this train back into the station here. So you're talking about
she could at least have a rap battle with Tessa Thompson.
Oh my god!
Just because she was once married to Flavor Flav.
What? Oh yeah, I saw a photo of that. I forgot. Flavor Flav.
Okay.
Terrible.
So going back to what you were saying, were you?
I was really excited going into this movie.
Okay.
Let's be clear. Ivan Drago is like the bad guy.
Oh, 100%.
Like, oh, yeah.
Of all the... He killed Apollo Creed.
Yeah.
Like, he was responsible for his death. So, like, of all the people that Rocky ever faced in the ring, of most of the bad guys from movies in the 1980s, like, Ivan Drago is up there. Mm-hmm. Like, in terms of realistic movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ivan Drago is like the Darth Vader of realistic, like real world style movies, yeah. Non-fantastical. So to bring him back was super smart. Mm-hmm. Like really, really compelling.
Especially when you have him in such the shape that he's in, thanks to like a lot of the expendable films, a lot of the other smaller films that he had been doing, jumping back into cinema, more prominent cinema, should I say, getting into more of the roles, being more fit, it made it make more sense. Mm-hmm. As opposed to like just out of nowhere, oh, here's Dolph Lundgren, who hadn't done nothing for God knows how long, you know, like, oh, definite cash grab. Like, you can tell this was methodical.
Wasn't he in Sharknado?
Yeah,
he was the older version of
the boy Finn's
son.
Finn's son.
Yeah.
What was his name? It's a stupid shark.
Gil.
Yeah, ugh. Gil.
Oh my god! Gil. You just remember that because of Tara Reid.
Yes, I was hearing
Gil. Gil, come back, Gil.
I love your Tara Reid impersonation. Spot on.
I hope she never hears that.
I'm coming to sue you guys.
It's like a cross between Howard's mother from Big Bang Theory and the actual Tara Reid.
Oh my gosh. Chad, what were some of your expectations?
Okay, so again, Lesson 99, we talked about the first Creed film, among others, in that episode. So go back and listen if you haven't already heard it. We all had favorable responses. The first Creed film was a worthy extension of the franchise. I think it's a very graciously done expansion of the story because, I mean, everything is very focused on Rocky mm-hmm. up until that point. And now you've got sort of a passing of the baton, really. I mean, Rocky is 50% of the film.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got his, like, you know, his battle against cancer and whatever. Mm-hmm. Sorry, spoiler alert, but it's been 3 years, so you can get over it.
If anybody gets upset at that, come on.
And, you know, he becomes established as not just a coach and a mentor, but really a father figure for Adonis Creed,
yeah.
who's kind of rudderless and just angry and trying to make a name for himself that mirrors his father, but is also his own. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you get that whole flow and that whole storyline in Creed. And so now coming into this one, there is no comparison to Ivan Drago. Like there's no other figure quite like that one, particularly for this franchise. So to bring him back, to bring his son back and have his son fight the son of Apollo Creed in the ring, genius. Like, I kind of wish that there was some secret pamphlet of papers or something that said, hey, back in 1985, they knew this.
Yeah.
But, like, they didn't. They didn't know that was going to grow into this. But the fact that it has is absolute cinematic genius.
Yeah.
And I also like and have continually liked the creative role that Sylvester Stallone plays behind the scenes in terms of co-writing these films, executive producing. Like, it's incredible to see the evolution of the character and to know that the performer has had such a hand in it. Not only, like, not because he's a control freak. Like, when you listen to or read interviews with him and all of that, I mean, it's very much out of love and respect for the character and specifically for the fans, those who've enjoyed this franchise from the beginning or the middle or wherever you joined. He takes it very seriously, and he comes at it not just as a performer but as a creator. And so that that I think is really, really special. Like, behind the scenes, that's a really special element of sort of the how movies get made part of this story. So I was really looking forward to it. I my anticipation level was high. I was desperately hoping to not be disappointed walking into the theater.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you say that in terms of, like, having Rocky still on, because there's an old story that goes around. Well, it's not really a story. It's actually true, but it's been passed down in terms of, like, when Sylvester Stallone first pitched back in 1976, the first Rocky, he wanted to direct it, and he wanted to star in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the studio was somewhat on board with it, but they told him they didn't want him to direct it. They were fine with him acting in it, and they were fine with, they were going to do whatever rewrites, but they didn't want him to direct it. Because he didn't budge, they significantly dwindled his budget that he had, making it minuscule. But it became the number one film of that year, either way. And it just goes to show, like, how much heart he put into it, how much he was invested into it. Even to this day, he may just be acting and writing in it, but he's still putting his heart. You can still see the footprints, if you will, of what it recognizes from all the way back in 1976, all the way up until now, and seeing how it still has that trace of him throughout it. And it's admirable to be able to still want to invest into a property that you started so many years ago. And not so much, like you were saying, it's not a control thing. It's more of like, I've helped create this, and I enjoy creating this, and this is like my sandbox. This is where I thrive. This is where
and there's such a level of reality to it. I mean,
oh yeah,
you know, if this franchise had, you know, passed from creative person to creative person to creative person, and he wasn't as invested and involved as he has been the whole time with how the character is written and portrayed and what happens and how you reflect things like what what happens to a person's brain when it undergoes that amount of, like, concussive beating and all of that. Or, you know, the first Creed film with the cancer, you know, subplot, if you will. But just the, you could easily make it very plot driven, you know?
Yeah.
Star character, boxer, is this personality. We need this to happen to him and that to happen to him and that to happen to him. And really, when you look at the story, like, start to finish of this character, it's just a lot more real feeling.
Yeah.
It's not like we're going through the paces of a story and we're amping everything up so high. Like, the fighting is amped up, sure. But it doesn't feel contrived.
No.
The way that a lot of fictional character-based stories are contrived. And this story obviously is contrived, but it has the shade of, this could be like a series of biopics.
Oh, without a doubt.
This obviously, totally, each of them taking place in their own era, because I don't know that the early ones would qualify for, true, like, today's level of expectation for a biopic. But
yeah.
You know, but in their own time period, yeah, they all kind of, they almost have that documentary style feel to them.
100%. I totally agree, because you look at every single significant part of what made this entire franchise, and every instance, every high and low point is something that can easily be identifiable in anybody else's life. Like, you can immediately connect from the first one, just a nobody who was just trying to make a quick buck by being a loan shark, and finding out that he could actually box and wanting to box, and to losing people, to losing friends, to having, you know, issues with, you know, within the dynamic of having a wife who supports you or having a son who wants to be troubled, you know, in Rocky V, and you have, you know, all the situations that follow through, and it's like you recognize all of it and you see it. And like you said, there's actual real life situations, like you were saying, like with the head trauma and everything, like from the transition from Rocky IV to Rocky V, and he's like, he can't fight anymore because if he takes another punch, he could die.
Yeah.
That's all part.
And to be willing to tell that story in the first place.
Oh, completely.
You know, because that, even in like the lives of professionals, you know, that was known but also somewhat hidden from public scrutiny.
Yeah.
You know, even beyond the time when they were putting it into Rocky movies.
Yeah. So, yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying. I didn't mean to cut you off, though. I wasn't sure if...
No, I'm fine.
In terms of expectations, like I said, I'm a huge fan of this franchise. Like, the idea of this everyman being able to persevere even though every single odd is against him, and he is essentially the type of person you wouldn't... And I mean this with all respect. It's just the way he created the character, but he seems like the type of person you wouldn't trust with something valuable or something, just because he seems like he's a little... He's not very educated. He doesn't seem that smart. He doesn't seem very, you know... Just... He doesn't seem all there sometimes. And you recognize that, and still he perseveres and he pushes forward and he works hard and he tries. And I mean, even in the very first film, you look at Rocky I, and the entire film is built up to this great, you know, underdog versus the champ, this fight that's just a practice bout, it's just an exposition, and we're going to make it this big old thing. And he ends up being able to knock down the champ in one of the rounds, which is completely based on this incident which happened years before with Muhammad Ali giving this one underdog fighter a chance during a boxing match, and the boxer actually ended up swinging and punching and hitting Muhammad Ali, and he knocked him down. Now, mind you, it wasn't like a knockout. Some people will, you know, refute that and say, oh, he slipped and he fell. But to a lot of other people, you see this nobody, and he laid a punch on the chin of this god, this Adonis, if you will. And you see him fell, this behemoth of a man, and it begins to inspire hope. And that's kind of what the inspiration was for the first Rocky. And even at the end of the film, Rocky doesn't win, but still you recognize the journey and the hope and whatnot. And so one of the biggest expectations I had for this film was I wanted to make sure that when I'm watching this movie, I am still feeling like the first time I watched Rocky I. And I know that might sound a little unfair, because you may say, oh, well, Rocky I was directed by Sylvester Stallone. It was written by him, and it was acted, and he did all this, blah, 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 and that was back in 1976. That's fine. But the fact of the matter is, it's still in the same franchise. It's considered all a part of the same franchise. So much like any Marvel film, much like any DC film, you know, much like any Star Wars film, or even...
Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings.
All of those. You still hold it to the same candle that you would to the first film, to whatever high point is in that franchise. You hold every film to that caliber because you expect that. You want to see that. You want to experience that again. And so my biggest expectation, honestly, was just making sure that when I walked away from this film, I could say, yeah, that was a part of that franchise. So that's honestly the biggest thing. I didn't want to come into it and feel like, oh, well, they changed everything. You know, making it seem like, oh, you know what, we're going to call it a Creed film. It's going to be a part of the quote-unquote Rocky franchise, but we're going to totally shift everything, and it's actually going to be, they're going to rap battle in the ring. They're not going to do, I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, that was my expectation, making sure this film stays within the heart and the vein of what the franchise itself has led up to this point. So jumping right in, we're right away introduced to our previous characters. Actually, the film starts right away with the introduction to what you may expect to be maybe Rocky, maybe somebody who's getting up for a morning, you know, workout, and you soon find out that you're watching Victor Drago and Ivan Drago getting up, getting ready for workout.
Yeah, it starts with them. It's really incredible. Like, from the first scene, you start to realize that this is going to end up being a more balanced, like, you know, good versus evil film than what you would expect given Ivan Drago's previous appearance.
Right.
And the fact that it's a Creed movie, you know, and obviously, as you mentioned, Eddie, a Rocky movie, but the scene that starts the movie is the bad guys, the father and son.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're intelligent enough, and I'm sure all of you are, all of us are, you know that there are things that talented storytellers put in the beginning of a story that's going to be a motif that runs through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So seeing this father-son dynamic,
mm-hmm.
that's not the, you know, Rocky Adonis father-son mentorship kind of thing. It's an indication right from the start that this is an important part of the story that you're going to see.
Yeah. And the unique thing about it, about that particular first scene, is that it follows the progression from when they first get up. And even like within the first 10 seconds of the film, you're right away introduced to, and I know I'm just diving a little deep into this, but you're introduced right away to the dynamic of the relationship between the dad and son. Because when he wakes them up, he doesn't even wake them up. He hits them. And he gets up, and it's like, oh, okay. Like, you think, oh, well, that's an odd way to wake up your son. But then you begin to slowly realize, yeah, oh, wait, that's the dynamic they have.
Not when you're Russian living in the Ukraine.
Or you're Swedish pretending to be Russian. No, but I say that to say, you know what, from that beginning introduction to their relationship all the way through, you see them working out together. You see him pushing. You see Ivan Drago pushing his son to constantly work out and train harder and harder. And it leads all the way up into a bout that he has where he's standing in the middle of the ring as this huge behemoth of a man and knocks out this guy that's in the ring. So it follows that progression as you see that. And there happens to be a gentleman who is...
Well, and it's very specifically like no glitz, no yes. glamour. These are like cage fight type situation. Like he's not... At this moment, he's not on the world stage.
No. And it shifts over right from there. It shifts over to a bout, Adonis Creed is preparing for another bout. It seems to be some type of world championship bout, or it is the world championship bout.
Heavyweight, yeah.
Heavyweight.
He's going for the belt.
And so you're reintroduced to him. He looks in great shape. You see Tessa Thompson again. And she looks great in the film. She picks up right where she left off in the previous film. They are in a relationship. It doesn't say how much time has passed, but it shows enough time that they've gotten
eventually
closer.
You hear the term years.
Yeah. Yes.
He says the word years. So you know that it's been a little while.
So you're reintroduced to their dynamic, them as a relationship. They even do a little sign language to each other. As if you recall from the first film, Tessa Thompson is suffering from a disease that is causing her to lose her hearing slowly but surely. So she has hearing aids and she speaks in sign language as well sometimes. And after everybody exits the room, you get this like slow walk in of Rocky as he's talking. So I'm going to be honest. When I heard Sylvester Stallone talking as he was walking into the room, I honestly thought that he was a ghost. Like, I thought
the cancer got him.
I thought he had died. No, like, so in the film, in the scene, you just see his reflection in the mirror and you hear his voice, but he's in the corner. He's in the dark corner. So he's all like dark and you don't see him fully and you just hear his voice. And it's like a very thought provoking moment that he's telling him. He's like, you know, when you're in that ring, it's just you and him. You're going to feel lonely. You know, it's a very like, very thoughtful moment that he's talking, and I'm like, oh crud, he's dead, isn't he? He's dead. I think I actually like nudged Spencer or something. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, because it would have bugged me. I'm not gonna
somebody
lie.
Didn't watch the trailer for this movie. Well, and they clearly have a physical like interaction face to face.
It was like that movie Ghost.
exactly. See,
Patrick Swayze, where'd you go?
As long as there's no pottery wheel. So you get his introduction back into the fray. He looks great. He's, you know, he looks healthy as opposed to what you saw him in the last film, where he was struggling to run up the stairs in the very last scene of the film. And so you see him go out. They have this bout. You're also introduced back to Felicia Rashad's character as the film progresses, who plays Apollo Creed's...
Adonis Creed's mother.
Adonis Creed's mother, yeah. Apollo Creed's, you know, widow, wife. And Felicia Rashad is just awesome.
Amazing.
I just really have to say that. Like, her just ability to always look like the type of mom that you know you've had or you've had at one point. It's like, I see the looks and I'm like, oh my gosh, my mom is giving me that exact same look. And it's funny because she is such a great actress, and I think she's completely underappreciated in the industry. Like, I don't think she gets enough opportunities to really shine. And that may be like her doing, like, she doesn't take every opportunity or everything that's like handed to her. But I really think like she should
be
more.
Well, I mean, honestly, and until everything about Bill Cosby came out, The Cosby Show was in reruns for like 20 years. I mean, like, the residuals have probably been kind to her so that she could pick and choose what projects she wanted to participate in.
That's a really good point, actually. You were going to say something, Spence?
No.
Incorrect.
But I just say that to say there have only been a few opportunities where I've actually seen Felicia Rashad truly be given the opportunities to shine. And like, one of them was a film that was done by Tyler Perry where he's not playing a woman. It's called Four Colored Women. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that, but she is phenomenal in that. She's done several others, and I think she really does great in this franchise. Like, her playing Adonis's mom, it's phenomenal, and it's always on beat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems like she never misses the opportunity to totally mom out on Adonis. And so I find that fun and cool. But as the thing goes on, as the film goes on, you're obviously revealed that Victor and Ivan have come to the U.S. to throw out this, you know, challenge to Adonis, and Rocky telling him that, you know, he wants to fight the heavyweight champion. Although that's an interesting part of the story. Now, normally when you have things like that happen before, like with Rocky IV, you have this specimen of an individual. You have this whole, you know, trying to make, you know, Russian relations with the U.S. all nice and prim and pretty because of the fact of everything that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
It made sense to try to have a quote unquote goodwill bout. It was normal, like, to see if you can make amends and just be happy with each other and, you know, whatnot. This just
as long as your team wins,
well,
or
exactly.
You're a fighter.
Exactly. But in this case, it was kind of like out of the blue. Like you were saying earlier, Victor hadn't really done any large fights. He wasn't known in the circuit. He didn't have, like, I don't know if there's like a registration you have to do or something. I don't know what the requirements are to be recognized in the league, but he just showed up like, hey, so I'm related to so-and-so. We should fight.
Well, I thought that was on purpose because of like, him being Ivan Drago's son, and it sounds like mm-hmm. Ivan Drago himself was blacklisted in a lot of places. And it seems like it would have been better to stay away from that and just build up his kid till he's ready to take him out. That's what I got.
That's true. I'm just thinking like Spence, from a logistical standpoint. From a logical standpoint, it kind of jumps the level of disbelief. And mind you, this is obviously a fake. It's a movie. It's not real, but I'm just, that kind of stuck out of my head. Like the first time in Rocky IV, there was a reason. It made sense. It was a goodwill fight. It was all in the sense of making, you know, good relations between the U.S. and Russia. Okay, Siberian Death Train. Let's get into the ring with that.
Although it is in line with what we've seen from the Creed sub-franchise, let's call it. I mean, like the Adonis's name.
Mm-hmm.
Got him extra buy-in once he finally really, really started down the path, because he also did sort of the, you know, I don't know what you call it when it's, you know, not the official circuit, but it's not exactly like Fight Club kind of stuff or like
underground or something.
It wasn't exactly underground. I mean, he did some, you know, some rougher fighting in the beginning, as I recall, of yeah. Creed, but it wasn't like, you know, total dingy underworld, you know, crime lord kind of battles for drugs and stuff like that.
They're fighting pit
bulls
now. Nor
is Victor Drago. Like, he's fighting in like off the beaten path circuits to build a bit of his resume, his fight record, and position him to come onto the world stage. But it is his name and the fact that his father is actually still alive and is his manager.
Yeah.
And, you know, coach, whatever, that catapults him right into the spotlight as soon as they decide that they're ready.
All right, I'll recognize that, Spence, I guess.
Yeah.
I just it was just an interesting like point of like recognizing the flow of it. Like I said, with Rocky IV, you have it just made sense. This is kind of... Either way, so as the film continues... So one of the things I just want to kind of highlight, the bringing back character, and it's something that Chad had, you know, spoken to earlier, the bringing back of Ivan Drago. So it's funny because you have this character out of everybody in the entire franchise of the Rocky films, who is the one... opponent that you remember the most?
Ivan Drago.
Yeah. I like, is this a trick question? No.
But I'm just saying the idea of doing this wasn't just smart, but it was genius. Mm. Because you wait until you've extended the franchise to a point to where you've now have the quote unquote, if you will, son of Rocky. Obviously he's not his, you know,
well, I mean, he's
son,
the
but...
son of Apollo Creed,
yes,
which is a huge part of that dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like the spiritual successor, if you will, and mentee of mm-hmm. Rocky Balboa.
Yes.
Yeah. That's like literally the 1-2 punch of storytelling gold, no pun intended. And now he's facing off against the guy that killed his dad and that his, you know, mentor finally defeated.
Yeah. Here's a thought. How would you have felt if instead of Ivan Drago, they would have brought back Clubber Lang or even Thunderlips?
Well, that doesn't have quite as much impact as Ivan Drago does.
Why not?
Well, because it's freaking Ivan Drago. Like, that's the guy I remember, like, Ivan Drago. I remember Mr. T was there for a bit.
Yep.
And then, like, everyone right. else is kind of like a background
prediction
fire.
Pain.
But, like, just the fact that, like, he killed his dad. He just
I like how he says that while laughing. Like, the fact that he killed his dad.
It was like, insane.
Yeah, it was absolutely insane.
During Rocky IV, that was just madness. And it was like, oh, I'm back now. Here's my kid. Fight him.
Now, here's, and I'm, mind you, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, but what do you guys think about the fact that since they've played this card, what's the bigger thing in the future? Like, what could they do next that could top this? Like, I'm just thinking in terms of, do you think they played their best hand too early? Like, do you think this was this should have been further down the road as the franchise continued? Or do you think, yeah, it was fine and they'll probably have something better next time?
I don't think so, because one of the other major components of the story is that Adonis Creed is becoming a father himself. Like, yeah. This whole thing, we titled this lesson Daddy Issues, and I would argue for some spoilery-ish reasons, it could also be called Mommy Issues on one part, because there was some real, real storytelling brilliance.
Yeah.
In the back half of this movie. But the daddy issues thing, I mean, it's just like, it's so much about fatherhood and sonhood, and there's so many layers that they explore in this movie. It's remarkable. And so to kind of pair up, you know, the tension between Adonis and Rocky,
yeah.
The desire to win back honor after 30 years between Ivan and Victor. The wrestling within himself that Adonis does over unexpectedly now becoming a father himself. And just like there's so many layers, and they're so relatable. Like it's not done so much for the hype factor or the larger than life. I mean, yeah, Victor Drago is a guy I would not want to meet.
Yeah,
in a light alley, let alone a dark alley. The dude is huge.
I wouldn't want to meet him in a Chuck E. Cheese.
Exactly. He can have the ball pit. But beyond, you know, the things that could have been really overemphasized, somebody with a very delicate, deft hand at storytelling, or maybe several somebodies, they were involved in the making of the script for this film, and it shows.
Yeah,
because they don't lean only on the sensational parts of the story, which are there. They don't like ignore it, but they don't only talk about that. There's also a lot of nuance and subtlety, surprisingly, especially on the part of Victor, I would say, and a performer who is not, up to this point, a movie star. Like, not somebody who has been trained in, like, here's how to show subtle emotions on your face. Like, he did a fantastic job with some of the stuff they gave him. And by the end of the story, I don't want to jump the gun too much, but by the end of the story, they do something like almost like it's like alchemy. Like they transform what should be like the ultimate expression of a bad guy. Like, let's say the Kylo Ren, for lack of a better example at the moment, but like, you know, the successor to the bad guy that was before, right? Kylo Ren is sort of taking his grandfather's mantle, Darth Vader. Here you've got Victor, certainly positioned to be the next, you know, even tougher, even more unbeatable Ivan Drago.
Yeah.
And yet you care about him. You care about the story of his entire life and what happens, you know, in the final battle scene of the film. Like, it's, I don't know that I've ever seen a boxing film that does emotional depth and subtlety so well. Like, it was it was incredible by the end of the movie.
Because you find yourself in a space, and I'm not, like Chad said, I'm not going to spoil it, but after you've gone through this entire journey with these characters and with these individuals and their quote-unquote, you know, father figures, you have this bout, which obviously that's no surprise to anybody. There's obviously a big fight at the end of the film. But
there's a big fight in the middle of the film.
There's a big fight in the middle of the film, too.
I was like, wait a minute, how long is this movie?
Yeah, I was confused by that one, too.
43 minutes, that's all it took. but at the point of this larger fight at the tail end, you not only have the fight going on, but then, like Chad was saying, you have all the subtle nuance that's going on, like the subtext that's happening.
Pathos. It is straight up pathos.
Yes, because what's happening during the fight, what's happening in between rounds, what's happening in everybody's corner, what's happening in the seats, all of that plays into the story that is coming to this large resolution, if you will, of this, I guess the best word to put it is like this symphony of storylines that are being drawn together to have this one massive conclusion at the end of the film. And it's true. It's beautiful because you have all these things that are happening throughout the entire film. Like Chad mentioned, Adonis is a father now. He is choosing to take on this battle, this fight that, you know, essentially is with the son of the man who killed his own father. That completely sounds Shakespearean, by the way.
Yeah. oh, it's total Shakespeare.
And you have that going on with, you know, with also the situation with Rocky and him being a part of Adonis's life and being there for Adonis and his family, but also his own personal issues with him having lost connection with his own son. And then you have the storyline with Victor Drago and Ivan, and there's so much, like, that is, that alone, that relationship deserves like family therapy. Because, like, yeah, it's insane. some of the quote unquote motivational things that Ivan says to him are just, no, like, you don't say that. Like, I believe it was like,
and yet by the end, even Ivan Drago is incredibly sympathetic as a character. Mm-hmm. Like,
which was crazy.
Like, I know, I, like, you hear people like sniffling and blowing their noses in the theater, mm-hmm. and I won't lie, I teared up, and I was uh-huh. like, do I feel this way about Ivan Drago?
Mm-hmm.
And his kid?
Yep.
Like, I thought we were supposed to not like them.
And it's so true, because you look at the progression of any of these films, and it seems like the depth of the film continues to build each time one of these comes out, from Rocky I all the way through, the depth of emotion and subtext that is added every time each one of these films, all the way from Rocky I to Rocky V to Rocky Balboa to Creed II. I mean, oh my gosh, how much emotion they derive from in terms of creating these storylines and making it all about that ultimate human connection relation. Like, it's all based on that. Like, every single one of these films, if you look at the mere skeleton of what it is, it's about the miracle of human connection and whether you have it or
what
you don't.
What does Rocky end up trying to really drive home with Adonis once they kind of mend fences? Because mm-hmm. they're at odds for the middle third of the movie. But once they're mending fences, and his whole refrain is, what are you fighting for? Who are you fighting for? That's what you've got to figure out, or you shouldn't go fight anymore, because you're not there. Like,
yeah.
Because you don't know why you're there. You know, so you're not going to triumph. And that become, I mean, that's a great reflection on the franchise as a whole. And Rocky as a character, his ability for self-reflection and taking into account the things that he hasn't, that he's not proud of,
yeah.
you know, the way that he's behaved as a father, or, you know, what have you, and what he chooses to do with, you know, all that emotion. I mean, there's a whole, almost like an epilogue to the story that is fully focused again on Rocky, that had people tearing up again.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a Rocky movie. So, you know, like, you know that sometimes it gets the heartstrings. Mm-hmm. Like, it's yeah. not the first Rocky franchise film to do that.
Nope.
But gosh, when it gets you, it gets you.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because, like, even in the moments that Rocky is speaking into Adonis, and so, obviously, there's a early throwout challenge between Adonis and Victor Drago, and in like fashion as to like the previous Rocky films, there's a situation where the fighter is told by somebody significant in their life that they shouldn't take the fight, or that they should maybe just think about it or something. And so it's interesting, because there's a whole scene that really, really was powerful, and it's the scene that kind of sets off the reasons why Rocky and Adonis are at odds. And they're talking right outside of Rocky's house, and Adonis is telling Rocky, I'm going to take the fight. And Rocky's telling him, you know, that he doesn't need to. Why does he need to? And he said, well, you did. And it was interesting, because you had mentioned this before, and it wasn't until I saw the whole scene that I realized, like, the beauty and the intricacy of what he's saying to Adonis. But he tells him, he says, yeah, I fought him before, and he broke things in me that ain't never been fixed.
Yeah.
And we're talking like years since that fight. And those, that line alone is like, you realize the enormity of what that fight actually did to him. And that's a powerful scene, like recognizing, yeah, there are things in me that have yet to be fixed because of that fight, not only physically, but probably emotionally as well. And it's that type of scene that makes you go back, and you go back and watch Rocky IV, which I did, and you go back and watch Rocky IV, and you listen to everything that they're saying to Rocky when he's in the fight, and his corner man is telling him, you give it all you got, you leave nothing left, you go out there, you ultimately telling him to put it all on the line, and you realize he really did, and left with not much, like came back with not much. And you recognize like, oh my gosh, that's what they were talking about. That's what he means. Like, that's what he left into the ring. And there's just, I'm losing my mind. My hands are moving all over the place because it's just, I love this franchise. And that's the kind of thing that carries over with this type of storytelling. You have a film that carries that same vein, that same heart that the Rocky franchise itself carried. And it's beautiful because, like Chad mentioned, there's this human connection. There's this identifying yourself within the characters almost instantly within these films. And this is one of those instances where I think the story really lives up to the franchise as a whole, in my personal opinion. I think the story does really well. Now, unfortunately, and it was interesting that you had mentioned it, Chad, in the text that we were in, the film does kind of lull a bit in terms of that first part, the first maybe 20 minutes of it getting to the 20.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a perfect film.
No, of course not. But it does
have, it has one of the most satisfying conclusions I've ever seen in like a sports oriented film, many of which are meant to be inspiring, but like the goal is to like become the champions, you know, or whatever. But like this one is about so much more, and they stack so many more layers into the story that you may notice that it's happening early on, but it's kind of a slow build in the beginning. But once you get to Adonis's recovery, because let's just call a spade a spade.
Yeah.
Victor creams him.
Yep.
Like, destroys him in the ring
in
their first meeting. And then you're left thinking, like, wait a minute, how long is this movie again? Like, it's going to end soon, isn't it? This didn't go very well. And but then from that point on, it becomes about so much more for all of them. Like, for all of the characters, including the ones that you're not supposed to like.
Yeah.
And suddenly, I mean, I can talk for myself. I think that given the sniffles near the end, there were other people in the theater like me. But suddenly, I became fully invested in all of the characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Truly. And I think the unique thing, now that you're talking about it, is that this film kind of embodies a lot of the best things of the entire franchise in terms of what it's serving the audience. People are recognizing not just the Adonis Creed and the Creed franchise part of this film franchise overall, but they're recognizing the bits and pieces that have made this film so great and so unique. Like, you look at, like Chad spoiled, the bout that's in the center of the film where he loses, the amount that he loses, he doesn't physically die or anything, but the amount of shame and guilt that he carries, the amount of just shot to his pride, the amount of pain that he takes to his
blame
pride,
that he puts on Rocky,
it almost feels like a death. And that goes back to the second film, or the third film, sorry, when he fights Clubber Lang, and Mickey passes away at the middle of that film, right after the Clubber Lang fight. And you see Rocky in that film, and his eyes are all puffy, and he's beaten, and he's broken, and he's weeping over Mickey's body. And you go back to this film, and you look at Adonis Creed, and his face is beaten to a pulp. He is in pain. He is struggling. And it's reminiscent of that. And this film really does embody all the great things that make this franchise so great and so loved for 30 plus years. So I really love that aspect of this film. But kind of rounding it out as we...
I'm curious to know.
Yeah.
Because you and I are really good at just kind of talking over each other.
Yeah.
And not opening the door to Spencer. So to open the door more to Spencer.
Spencer.
Like, how did you, like, sort of the roller coaster of the film? Like, because I'll be honest, I'll be straightforward. Mm-hmm. I almost fell asleep a couple of different times in the first 20 minutes of the film. Until that first fight between Adonis and Victor. And then I was fully engaged. You couldn't have knocked me out. Well, Spencer could have. He's a big dude. But he never would, because he's a gentle giant too. But like, how did it feel like start to finish? The flow of the film and your reaction as an audience member and a fan of, you know, the franchise.
Man, that it was just up and down. Like once that fight started, like the first one between Victor and Adonis, like just watching that beating, watching the recovery, watching everything that came after that, like I think it was like midway from the story, I was like, I don't know if they're going to do a sequel to this because I don't know how they could do better than this.
Yeah.
Like, because like that's the amazing slash kind of sad thing about this film is that it's so good that I can't see where they would possibly go with it. And that makes me kind of sad because this is just so fantastic. And the fact that I care so much about Victor and Ivan.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know more about those two,
mm-hmm.
which is crazy when, like, Rocky IV just treated him as, like, you know, the big Russian to beat in the movie. Like, they really gave, like, backstory, like, what's happened in the last couple of decades and, like, why they're even doing this in the first place. Like,
mm-hmm.
they made them such human characters. I was not expecting that at mm-hmm. all. And it was really fantastic. And I just love this movie so much. And I'm so glad we reviewed it. And that's like the highlights right there.
Yeah, me too. And one of the things I really love is how much it communicates without using words. It relies on the momentum of the story and the performances, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it trusts its audience. So often these days, you've got especially stories that are meant to kind of fit a certain mold, like, you know, the underdog fighter story. And basically, you spoon feed your audience everything all the time, and you don't trust them to be intelligent enough to connect the dots themselves.
Yeah.
And then you get a film like this, like Creed 2, and it's not the only one of its kind, but there are so many unspoken, poignant, important moments that, like, as long as you're fully engaged as an audience member, you're going to get it.
Yeah,
it's not like they're going to leave you in the dark, mm-mm. but they don't have to beat you over the head with it either. No pun intended. But, like,
you're on a roll with,
like,
these
you're
puns
sitting there. I'm sitting there watching this, and I'm like, at a certain point of the final battle, I'm like, oh, it's over. Oh, that's devastating. You know, like, and then things continue, and it's just like, I agree with you, Spencer. I think that number one, they've hit a really high watermark.
Yeah.
For a franchise to be this old, like this enduring, let's call it.
Yeah.
This enduring and to have gotten this far in the first place is remarkable. But to have done, especially with the pathos stuff, to have done what they did in this movie was mesmerizing. It was remarkable. It's going to be probably impossible to top, but I really hope that they find a way to match it because I don't want to stop seeing these characters. And I'm not even talking just about Michael B. Jordan and Tessa Thompson and Felicia Rashad and Sylvester Stallone, who are the ones that we know we like and we're supposed to. Like, the Dragos.
If they brought them back, I would be
They have to
happy.
Be. Like, their story is not resolved.
No.
Like, they have to be, like, the next movie has to be like a 50-50 or something. Not to take anything away from the fact that it's still like the Creed franchise, you know, derived from the Rocky franchise. But, like, the Dragos have to be a main part of the next story. You can't just drop it at the point that you leave them in this film.
Right.
And they earned it. That's the other thing. They earned another go. Like, the storytellers and the performers, like, they earned it. It's not just because it would still be interesting and, oh, people like bringing Drago back the last time, so let's do it again. But, like, they earned bringing them back.
Yeah, it's not like a cash grab type situation where it's like, we could make money if we did this. Like, no, this would actually make sense to do.
Yeah.
And you should do it if you're listening.
please.
Ryan Coogler, we know you're from Sacramento. And that's one of the great things about this film. And that kind of I bring back again the question that I asked earlier. Do we think that we hit the that we set the bar so high that there's really not a possibility of jumping over it again in the next film or setting another bar for the for this franchise?
I'd say the toughest part is the boxing. Like the toughest thing to continue at this point, like you have to introduce a rogue element in the boxing ring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
But like from a character building standpoint, like completely separate but also intermingled, but separate from each other, I super care about what happens to Adonis and his family. I super care about what happens to the Dragos, and I super care about what happens to Rocky and his family. Like, yeah. It's one of those things where you're like, can the other movie already be in the can and just come out next year? Like, can we just see the next part? Because
they filmed it back
to back. You got me. Like, you almost lost me in the first 20 minutes of this movie.
Yeah.
Part of it was because we saw it on a Sunday, and I'm used to taking afternoon naps on a Sunday. But all that aside, like, I was totally gripped by the end of the film. Like, I did not want it to be over.
Yeah. What about you, Spence? How do you feel about that bar being set so high? Do you think that there's possibly something within, and I'm thinking within the Rocky franchise as a whole, do you think there's still something that they could pull out of this entire saga that could set the bar even higher? Or do you think that we've kind of hit the peak of...
I think it's mostly because of the perfect matchup between Adonis and Victor that I don't think that they can like pull something from the past and have it make that level of impact again, because like that's just such a perfect matchup. I don't know what else they could possibly pull. They'd have to do something new, and I don't think they could. I am not saying they shouldn't try if they think they've got something like a great idea, but like for me, like, I don't think they can.
Creed 3, Adonis Creed versus Bridget Nielsen. No.
Oh.
What?
Well, I'm just joking, but in all seriousness, I don't know. I don't see, and I'm just going to be the obvious one here, and I don't know if there's any way they can reset that bar higher. I really don't. I love this film. I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was a great addition to the overall franchise. I enjoyed the heck out of it. But that's like coming out with like your best move first and then kind of just throwing everything else out as you go along. I'm pretty sure there's great writers. I'm pretty sure they're going to have a great opportunity to build something new. But in terms of like the peak of what has been done, I feel like this is probably the highest peak they can do for this franchise. Like, I really thought it was great, but maybe another film. Like I felt like maybe that should have been the next film and then something else to lead up to it. I don't know. I don't know if they'll be able to wow me in the next Creed film as much as they did in this one. Mm-hmm. And this one really did wow me.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
Uh-oh.
The Adonis-Victor dynamic is, I think, almost bound to shift into like a Rocky and Apollo thing.
Yeah.
And that opens up so much more potential for both sides of the coin. The side of the coin that says we need to have some motif like story elements that are familiar,
yeah,
but different. But then we also need enough latitude to tell it differently and in a way that makes sense with a modern audience. You know, that it has different expectations than the audience did, you know, X number of years ago. So I think that they've done a remarkable, like, just masterclass job of setting up enough potential storylines and story angles that you're going to care about by proxy. Like, if you paid attention at all and you connected at all with this film...
Mm-hmm.
They have like seven different directions they could probably go, and you're going to care because you care about the characters because they feel so human and relatable. So as long as they don't drop the ball in whatever that next installment is, and they don't turn it into, you know, too sensational or gimmicky or whatever, or they totally whiff on whatever storyline they decide to go with.
Yeah.
They're going to be fine. I don't know that they're going to have the same level of like, wow, that was such an incredible movie going experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thank you for making me cry. I don't know that the next one's going to have that same kind of feel to it, but I don't know that it needs to. As long as it doesn't screw things up with however it moves them forward,
mm-hmm.
I'm already bought in. Mm-hmm. I will buy that ticket.
Okay. All right. Well, as we wrap up, any last thoughts, any last issues, compliments, anything that we want to bring up before we give our review, our ratings, Spencer?
Nope.
No? Chadley?
Oh, I could probably go on and on and on forever, but no. I'll limit myself.
One last thing also I want to include in this was also the soundtrack was really inspiring because it holds a mix of both modern and contemporary style music, and then you have like the traditional type of score compositions. You have that Rocky theme mixed in with a little bit of like urban pop or a little bit of rap. You may have heard it earlier in the beginning of this episode as we introduced the film. The soundtrack to this film is amazing. I'm actually going to buy it as soon as I can because it was just really good. Like the last time I was so excited for a soundtrack was when Black Panther came out, and I actually have it right there on vinyl down there. So, but I think the soundtrack is one of those things where you have to recognize and just give a shout out to all those individuals because I believe it was like a collaboration of artists who came together to create the soundtrack. So, but that about wraps up this review of the film. As we go around the table, let's go ahead and give our pass or fail and how many monocles. Let's go ahead and start with Mr. Riley.
I think it's no secret that it passes.
Shock.
And that's that's saying something. Usually when I almost fall asleep in a film, I have a really hard time passing it, even if I respect certain things about it. This movie, it must have been me. It had to have been something with me that I was falling asleep because once it got me, it had me the rest of the time.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to hold that against it. Although I think that, you know, there were a few things that could have been done a little bit better in the beginning. I think once you hit the first battle between Adonis and Victor from that point forward, I wouldn't really criticize hardly anything about it.
Hmm.
And I think I'm going to give it a 5.
Like, really?
I think one of the most difficult things for any story to do well, and I've said this before, movies, TV shows, you know, that the whole, you know, franchise wraps up and ends, books, etc. To get the ending right, to make an ending feel like an appropriate, satisfying, fulfilling ending is very, very difficult. To do so in the way that this movie has done so, I think very few creative properties have really hit the mark so expertly for me the way that this one did. So, I mean, my hat's off. I don't know who all is responsible. It's a team effort. Any movie is, even bad ones. So I don't know who's responsible, but my hat's off to you guys.
Yeah.
5 monocles.
And it's interesting, before I go to Spence, it's interesting that you say that because I know one of the things you've always said as a screenwriter, that you said it's the beginning and the middle are always the easier part. It's the ending that most people have trouble with.
It's so, almost impossible to do endings well, I think, personally.
And I've been hearing that from you for many years. So to hear you give that much high praise to something like this in terms of ending, that actually says a lot. To just add precedence to what you're saying, it's a very unique thing for you to say.
Hey, I mean, after 33 years, I think I actually like Ivan Drago. Not that I saw it when it first came out. I was like 2 years old, but when I did see it, I mean, like, you're supposed to not like him. This movie, by the end, I was like, oh, actually, he's not as bad a guy as I thought. And there are some things I really like about him.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just head and shoulders above what I expected it to do. And for that, I have to give it high honors.
Spence, does it pass or fail? How many monocles?
This movie passes for me, and I will give it 4.5.
Nice.
Yeah. This is just a fantastic movie. I don't know how they even pulled off what they did, but they just made me care about everyone, and that is not something that happens super often in movies I see. Normally I'm leaving like, oh, I can ignore these people or this person sucks. But like, no, even though Ivan Drago does still kind of suck, but like, I want to know more about him.
Yeah.
And like, what has happened to him and where is he going now?
Yeah.
Type stuff.
There's at least 5% of him that doesn't suck now.
Yeah, a good five.
Didn't exist on screen before.
Yeah, there's at least five, yeah. I have to agree. The unique thing about this film that it does is it gives more of the... It humanizes the Siberian death train, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives the... In the short amount of time that it does, it gives you the quick synopsis of what has happened since that bout between Rocky and Ivan all them years ago and to today. And it does it in a quick, short, like, snip. Like, if you blink, then you'll miss it. If you don't pay attention, you're not going to hear it. But he says it, and he talks about it, and that adds so much weight to the character and where they are now and where he's, like, where he's pushing his son. This film, like you said, like everybody's been saying at this table, this film has made me like the Ivan Drago character in a whole different manner. Like, before, I liked him because he was a formidable opponent to the Italian Stallion. You know, you recognize that, and any great hero is only known because he has a great villain.
Sure.
And so in this aspect, that's what you recognize. In this way, though, I've learned enough about him where I would actually like to know what has transpired in all this time till now and what is going to happen after the fact. So the film passes for me. I'm going to give it 4.5 as well. I really liked it. I really enjoyed the movie altogether. The only thing that I have, the largest issue, is just where to go from here. Like, did we get the full buffet too quick? Or is this just the tip of the ice cream sundae and there's something bigger in store? I don't know, but I feel like this is a really high bar that was set. And as much as I enjoyed it, it makes me worry for what's to come because I really like this franchise and I want to make sure that the next film is just as great as the previous and so forth and so forth. So that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Again, if you have seen the film and you want to throw in your opinions, drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. A couple of upcoming weekend releases. Again, another slim week, but we got Mary, Queen of Scots in a limited release, released this Friday, starring Saoirse Ronan and Margot Robbie. We had the same issue when we did Lady Bird. And also we have Ben is Back in limited release as well, starring Julia Roberts and Lucas Hedges. So if you have a chance, check out those films. If not, go watch Creed 2. It's a great film. You'll enjoy it. That about wraps up the episode, though, so we thank you for listening. And so, from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.